Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, my name is Brittany Dolan, and I am co-founder of Pocketbook Agency.
Brittany, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and talk a little bit about your current organization, what you're building, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Of course. Well, first of all, John, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time, and I'm excited about our conversation. To give you a little background on me, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and after college, I dove right into the unknown career path of being a personal and executive assistant, working for an ultra high net worth family. And to make a very long story short, I ended up meeting my co-founder of Pocketbook Agency while I was working in this role. And we worked together in these, you know, very high level executive and personal assistant roles together with the same family for many years. And over those years, we worked with many recruiters and many agencies and hiring our own staff for our own team. And we had an aha moment of, you know, why are we not doing this on our own? This is something that we get approached for every day to help other people hire for their own teams. So basically we would work all day, 12-hour days. It's a tough role sometimes being in that personal and executive assistant position. And then we'd find time on the weekends at 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning and meet at a coffee shop to build our business plan. And over a few years, we developed that and tested it. And then in 2014, Pocketbook Agency was born. We are based in Los Angeles, but we serve the entire United States, and our focus is support roles. So, in the company, I serve as co-founder and co-CEO with my co-founder, Nicole. And I really oversee our team. I manage a very large part of our clients, as well as business development and company growth. So I've got my hands in everything, as does my co-founder. And it's exciting. It's a really fun time to be in the staffing and recruiting agency business.
Wow, what a story. And thanks for sharing that. Very exciting to always hear stories when individuals and people just working in a certain capacity, and then they realize that there's a lot more to this and take on that challenge of building something of their own. And because, you know, I've built many companies of myself, I know how hard it is. It's a 24/7 job. It never ends. Mm-hmm. So that's very exciting to hear that story. So tell us a little bit more about the Pocketbook Agency. First of all, what's the premise behind the name?
Yeah, great question. So basically, our main focus are support level roles. So we serve a variety of types of individuals across music and entertainment, tech and early stage companies, real estate, finance, venture capital, private equity. I mean, you name the industry, we've probably worked in it. But a large part of our business are personal and executive assistant positions. We work with a ton of chief of staff roles, estate managers, basically anything that falls under that support level placement between corporate office and domestic setting. So oftentimes we'll work with maybe a Fortune 500 CEO and help find their executive assistant, and also maybe find them an estate manager or a chef at their residence. So that's kind of the balance of how our company works.
Oh, wow. That's, I love that it's very niche-y, that you chose your specialization, mm-hmm. and you guys are succeeding from that perspective.
Yeah.
Because as they say, you know, the riches are in the niches, in the sense that, you know, you're not trying to go too far, too wide, too global. So that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So you've been in the staffing for a while now. And with the current market conditions, I'm pretty sure you research that a lot on the different trends and the different insights and ideas. Okay. Share with us those. What are you very passionate about? What is the next big thing on Brittany's plate?
Yeah, I love that question, John, because I think it's such an interesting time in hiring right now. I think there's so many different trends that we can focus on, and so many ideas and new things that are forming, especially in 2021 with, post-pandemic, almost post-pandemic hiring has increased greatly. We see so many companies just going through a massive amount of hiring right now, which is why it's an interesting time in our industry for sure. But I think one trend that seems fairly obvious, but I love to touch on this, is that remote work is here to stay. I think it's definitely something I personally am a huge fan of. And I think as an employer, there are so many benefits. I think it reduces the cost of overhead if you can get rid of an office space. It really opens up your candidate pool when you're hiring across the entire country, because previously, if you were based, let's say, in Los Angeles and you were hiring for an in-office role, you really had a small candidate pool unless you wanted to relocate somebody, which can be very expensive for a company. And now, if you have a remote role, you've suddenly opened up your candidate pool from maybe, 100 candidates to a couple thousand candidates. So it's a really big benefit to the employer. And as an employee, you can work from anywhere. It's helped people reduce their overhead as well in terms of their own personal living. It's also, I've seen an increase in productivity out of so many people that I've interviewed, whether it's people that we've worked with or our clients or our job seekers. There's a huge increase in productivity because there's no commute. You're, waking up, you have maybe longer work hours, which is a different conversation, but you have this better productivity because you're not necessarily distracted by the office chatter, right? You're in your own workspace. Some people would beg to differ depending on your circumstances in your home. If there's, no office space or childcare, there's so many different dynamics, but overall people have said there's an increase in productivity. And just as a fun fact, I would say 50% of the roles that we're working on right now as a company are either partially remote and partially in the office or fully remote. So it's an interesting trend. I also think that the hybrid role is here to stay as well, which is partially working in office and partially working remotely. And that's a very attractive type of role for job seekers right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are definitely very interesting trends. And, the overall trend and concept of future of work has been very interesting to me that I've been researching a lot. The premise behind the contingent workforce with gig workers, with contractors, consultants, freelancers, and so forth. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about that. What are you seeing in the market? What are the different, the trends that you're observing from future of work perspective?
Yeah, so future of work is interesting. I have seen a lot of what you just said, contract hiring, gigs, short-term hires. That is definitely something that's increased. But what I've also seen, just kind of going back to what I just touched on in terms of remote work, I think even more so, it's become a hybrid role. So whether it's not discussing those contract or gig roles, but more so focusing on permanent hires, because there has been such a massive increase in hiring over the past few months. The concept of the hybrid role is really attractive to job seekers right now. And because the market is so competitive with hiring, the future of work to me looks like that hybrid role. I think splitting time between work between home and the office, I've seen so many companies adopt this policy because not only the benefits I just discussed, but also I think 98% of the employers we're working with right now, when they do offer this hybrid role, they are also providing a work from home setup, which is helping candidates have the proper workspace. It's increasing productivity. And I think when I think of the future of work, I do see people going back in office. I think culture is something that people miss, and having, being able to walk by your coworker's desk and ask them how their weekend was, I think the office chatter is missed. But I think when it comes to productivity and ultimately what people are seeking when it comes to job seekers, they're looking for that hybrid role where they can have the flexibility to work from home and office.
Right, very right. No, absolutely. And like you've mentioned multiple times, that this trend is definitely here to stay, if only, mm-hmm. Not grow from that perspective. Because yeah. I've been there myself. I've been a contractor, I've been a consultant for many companies. Mm-hmm. And it's, organizations also, they seek that flexibility to exactly. be able to scale up or down, whatever the case may be. So I think that's very exciting.
Yeah.
So as you represent both sides, the hiring managers and the candidates.
Yes.
I'm always, the whole interview process is very interesting to me because it's an art and it's science. And it, you know, it's something that's only few people do a really great job at. Overall, I think it's, there's such a, you know, there's so much opportunity to improve. So as you partner with both sides and you prepare for that first interview, your hiring manager and your candidate, tell us about the strategies that really help you, you know, increase your batting average. In the sense that you set the right expectations, you make sure that everything, you know, the feedback is gathered and so forth. Tell us a little bit about some of the practical strategies that really help you improve that.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think going back to the job market right now, it's highly competitive. I would say that it's interesting. If you look back at pre-pandemic, the job force felt fairly steady. There were lots of jobs, lots of people available for work. But I think what happened is when the pandemic hit and a lot of people went through layoffs, it shifted the entire workforce for obvious reasons. But what's happening now is we're seeing, as we're slowly working towards that post-pandemic world, we're seeing a huge increase in hiring. So like I just said a few minutes ago, it's been, I would say, at least with our company, we're at 120% of our normal roles that we're working on right now. There's been a huge increase, and a lot of that are remote and hybrid roles, but some of them are in office. And I will say, when we're working with both sides, what's really important is setting a realistic expectation always. I think it's our job as a recruiter and as an agency to know our market. I think it's really important for us to know the trends. It's really important for us to understand what we're seeing in terms of hiring trends from both the candidate perspective and the employer, because it shifts all the time, just depending on the demand. And since it is such a competitive market right now, what we've been telling our clients is there's more jobs available, but what we've seen in terms of top talent, it's really a similar candidate pool to what it was this time last year. So when it comes to setting that expectation of what you can expect, I've been telling clients, it's highly competitive. People are paying higher salaries right now for the same roles that they were hiring for and paying less a year ago, because there's just been such a shift in the job market. So I think when it comes to working with our clients, we want to really set that realistic expectation of analyzing their job, seeing what they're looking for, being realistic about the market, and telling them what types of candidates we can expect to see, what salaries we're seeing, and what compensation packages, and whether it's a hybrid remote role or in-office role, and what's attractive not only to the employer when it comes to hiring, but also the candidate, because the market is so competitive right now. Candidates are looking at jobs for things, for more than just compensation at this time, and more than culture. They're looking at the flexibility. They're looking at diversity and inclusion. It's just a different market than it was. So we set that expectation of talking to the client and saying, what should we know about your company that makes this job really attractive to a candidate, in the same way that we would want to know why a candidate is attractive to our employer?
Right. No, that's, I love those strategies. I think, you know, it oftentimes it seems so simple, but oftentimes overlooked. And in a sense, when we talk about, you know, this candidate driven market, as you mentioned, that war on retention, I think, goes to another level, where organizations have to take, you know, that a lot more, you know, look at it from a lot closer perspective. So what are some of the things that you do that really help your client companies, your client organizations to retain the top talent? What are some of the strategies that they can do to build that environment to succeed in that space?
Yeah, I love that you asked me that question, because there's a saying, I will find the source, I don't know it, I've heard somebody say this recently, that hiring is half the battle, retaining top talent is how you win the war. Because truly, hiring is tough. I mean, that's why we have a company that does it all day long, right? It's like you work on one role, it can take hundreds of hours of your time just to find this one person, and then getting them into the role, knowing it's a good fit, and then figuring out, how do I keep this person in the role? And it goes both ways. It's getting the attractive job, the attractive candidate, they go together, it's matchmaking. I always say that recruiting is matchmaking. And when you put the two together, it's then in the employer's hands at that point to really maintain that retention. And a lot of that, I say a few things are really important. So an interesting fact as well is, a third of employees, if they leave their job, it's usually within the first year. So if you focus on that relationship from the beginning, from the onboarding process. It's crucial to retention, really building that relationship, developing communication, developing connection and trust. Those are really the key pieces of helping somebody feel integrated into the company and connected to what you're doing. And a few things that I always recommend to our clients to help build that relationship from the beginning is I ask them, when are you doing one-on-ones with your team? Are you doing a monthly check-in where you can have one-on-ones between employee and their manager? It doesn't have to be employee or to CEO or employee to founder. It can just be their direct report to build that relationship and make sure that your employee is feeling comfortable and included in the company, and also making sure that the manager knows what's going on with their job. So it really works to benefit both sides here, but that is one way that I love. I think also scheduling a yearly check-in and a possible review for a raise, if that's something that a company can afford at the time. Something else that I really like that's incredibly valuable, especially right now where there is so much remote work, is trying to focus on company culture as much as possible. Even virtual get-togethers, I recently did a virtual happy hour with my team. And I think that while we're remote, things like that really help everybody feel connected and inclusive. And that really, really helps retention. I think those are gaining that trust, and especially in the beginning, you're going to, you know, retain your employees if you develop those relationships. It's more than just the job. And just to also go back to a couple of other strategies, I think that the top reasons that people look to leave their roles, I think from my research and my expertise, the number one reason that people look to leave their job, even in today's market, is compensation. I think an attractive package, including, you know, flexibility, possible work from home, you know, the benefits package, the bonus, all of those things are still number one when it comes to retention. So I think when people are looking to leave their job, if you're, you know, you're, the company counteroffers and says, we really value you, here's what we're willing to do, that also helps retain your employees if you get to that point, or at least doing yearly evaluations to kind of see where you should be based on market and what you're doing for your team to help them feel valued. Going back to other reasons people leave, which I think is super interesting, aside from compensation being number one, I think culture fit is obviously very important. And that, again, goes back to retention and maintaining that connection and building the culture in your company. And then, you know, lastly, I also noticed from my own research with our own clients and job seekers that a lot of people really want to work partially remote or have the flexibility to not be in office all the time. But again, compensation and package increase is always number one. So I think given the fact that we've seen this sudden hiring increase in the past 4 months, like I mentioned, the employers that had to lay off staff are now ready to hire. So the candidates that are being poached, or they're trying to poach from current employers, now is the time for those employers to really look at their current employees and say, is this our top talent? How do we want to retain these people if so? And it's a good conversation to have right now in today's market as an employer, because the market is very crazy right now.
Right. No, I love these examples. And actually, thank you for providing those, mm-hmm. you know, concrete steps on how to increase your chances when it comes to retention and some of the reasons why people resign and leave and look for other opportunities. So the other interesting element that I've been hearing a lot as I talk to a lot of executives, different companies, it's also the whole onboarding aspect and the first, you know, 30, 60, 90 days of the employee as they enter completely virtual environment. So in your experience, what really helps you prepare some of your candidates, you know, starting with the first day on a job? Because one of the biggest challenges that I see, especially at the executive level, is when I first start out on the job, you know, typically you can go in and you meet people in the offices, you know, there's just a lot of opportunities to do that. But in a virtual environment, it's completely different, because it's just, you know, you're at the extension of whatever the communication tools you use, whether that's Slack or, you know, whatever the case may be. What are recommendations that, you know, that you provide to maybe the candidates that you place in order to really succeed in the virtual environment when it comes to networking?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting, because I think that right now, I can even speak to this with my own team. right when the pandemic hit in March of 2020, when everything shut down in Los Angeles, which is where we're based, we all started working from home. And in March of 2020, I onboarded a new assistant. And she has never worked in the office with us. And she's incredible. But we had, it really shifted our focus. And okay, so we're not only going through a very strange time in a pandemic, but we're also onboarding people. So I can think of it firsthand because I did it. And we also have onboarded since a handful of other people for our team that are all working remotely and we're onboarded remotely. And I think from firsthand experience that I would give this advice to any candidate or any employer even is the most important things are making sure that you have the proper setup. I think when it comes to working from home, you need to have the proper space, which isn't always doable. So sometimes finding a workspace or finding a corner or being able to go to a shared workspace or even breaking up your schedule of splitting your time in different places is really great. I think when it comes to networking and developing your relationships with your team, it's really important for the employer to understand that that's something that's really necessary. I think some companies are really good at it and some companies aren't. It's just how it is. And I think that the employee, when they come into the position, if that's something that they notice and they're like, hey, you know, we could really work on this piece by just doing more culture-oriented things or having, you know, a virtual get together or something to kind of foster that connection. It always comes down to the connection. And I think employees being able to speak up and talk to their employers first and foremost, you know, and being able to say, I think we need to do X, Y, and Z to help increase the connection with the new employees or, you know, something like that just to kind of help the connection. But in terms of networking, I really think it all comes back to connection at the end of the day. That's how we want our employees to feel with their new hires. That's how we want the candidate to feel with their new job. We want them to feel connected and excited about the role. So I think my biggest piece of advice there is that both sides really need to speak up in terms of connecting about how to create that connection, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, how do you start reaching out to people that, you know, you don't know, and it's a completely new environment. So it's, you know, like you were saying, in summary, just not being afraid to reach out and recognize the fact that everyone recognizes you are a new employee. So for majority of the situations, the people will be more than willing to actually extend a helping hand and try to meet with you, tell you a little bit more about and try to make further introductions. So I think that's very interesting. We want to shift gears a little bit and talk, you know, from an operator founder perspective, for those that are considering to, you know, good portion of the listeners are entrepreneurs and those that are, you know, founders of different companies, those that are considering to launch and operate and start their own staffing company. Tell us a little bit more about the biggest challenges that you did not anticipate when you got into the business, or when you first got started out, because it's always easy to identify the good. But when it comes to, you know, just running into brick walls, what were some of those? And, you know, to the extent that you can share some recommendations there.
Yeah, that's another great question that I actually love talking about, because I feel like whenever we work with startups, we have so much to relate to, because we just understand, we get it, we've been there. But I think when you're starting a company, you know, not only are you trying to figure out what you're solving for, right? Like, your company has to have a purpose and it has to be interesting and innovative and different than what everybody else that you would consider a competitor is doing. And I feel like when we started Pocketbook, we were trying to find our niche, and we obviously found our niche with primarily staffing personal and executive assistants. They account for 80% of our jobs. But I would also say, when we were developing our business plan, there were so many roadblocks. I mean, I think it comes with the territory of being an entrepreneur. You're always kind of looking for the next best thing and growing and trying to develop something new. It's just kind of how your thought process works. And I remember when we were working on our business plan and putting together just how our processes and systems would work, I think our goal was to take what we saw as traditional staffing and recruiting and just turn it into something, one, that was super focused on what we knew best, which is the support role because we were in it for so many years. We know it like the back of our hands. We were the candidates that we work with today. So that we had that already going for us. But I think what we really wanted to kind of hone in on was our systems and processes, because the staffing and recruiting industry is such an old industry, right? It was started, I mean, you can even look back at like the 60s and 70s, some of those companies that were started then are still in business today, and they're fantastic large companies. But I think our goal coming in as a newer company and maybe a younger age demographic of founders was to modernize it and to just come up with systems and operations that felt a little bit more candidate-centric, a little bit more job seeker-focused, and really working on those, honing those relationships, not only with client, but with candidate. And when we were going through these processes, there was tons of trial and error. We would put together systems that we thought were perfect and they would fail. And I think failure, I always say failure is the most important part of growth. If you're not failing, you're not growing. So that was a big part of our first few years of business. And then once we actually started the business and hit the ground running, it's sort of like leaping off of a cliff and hoping that you grow wings on the way down. That's what I always compare being an entrepreneur to. And I think hoping you're going to get the business and hoping that your marketing plan is right and tweaking it. And again, failing and rebuilding. And even to today, you know, 8 years later, we're still tweaking our systems. I think we've got it under control now, and we've built a wonderful business with incredible clients and incredible job seekers. And we are continually changing our systems and processes just to keep up with how things should be done in today's day and age. Everything we do is without giving away too much of how our, you know, internal systems and processes work, but we're very much focused on the technology component. And we're very much focused on how we can streamline systems and operations to make staffing and hiring easy for candidates and clients alike. I think that traditional processes were very drawn out, and they were focused on the wrong things. We're very much focused on, I think, what we would consider the right things. But I will say, and anybody who has recently started a company or is in the startup stage will relate to this, that you go through a phase where you're the founder, you're the CEO, you're the CFO, you're the recruiter, you're the hiring manager, you're literally doing all of it. And it takes tremendous balance to be able to figure out the best way to do things, but also just to keep the wheels turning. It is anybody who can start their own company and successfully develop it is, you know, I applaud, because it is no easy task.
No, I love these, and we could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about this, because as a fellow, you know, founder of multiple startups, you've talked a little bit about failure, and I love that, because mm-hmm. failure is not really a failure. It's an opportunity to learn. And I always say that, you know, I started close to, you know, 6 or 7 different companies, and I successfully failed probably, you know, 90% of them. I did have mm-hmm. decent outcome with one, but overall, I think those are just the focusing on the good versus the great and getting things started and iterating from there. I think that's kind of the message what you're talking about, which is super powerful. And I love these recommendations. That's so cool. And from your perspective, when it comes to content diet, share with us the sources that you utilize on a daily basis that really help you stay ahead of the curve, ahead of the competition. Yeah. Because so much information has been thrown at us, we have to be extremely selective with what we let our minds be exposed to. So share with us those. What's the little bubble that you live in when it comes to content?
Well, I will say it is a little bubble, because I actually try to stay away from most news sources, just as a general statement, because I feel like a lot of the information is highly opinionated or slanted one way or the other. And when I look for information, it's about learning something new. So I think anything that's an educational article, I rely heavily on Forbes. I have been writing articles for them as well, and I'm heavily involved in their platform. I think that they have a lot of great information and knowledge, especially when it comes to what I focus on in my business, which is staffing and recruiting and what's going on in the world today with hiring and metrics and all of that. So that's always been an incredibly helpful resource. There's also some other hiring and recruiting blogs that I follow that I think very helpful for my industry, but if it's not an educational article that's helping me learn something, I really love podcasts right now. How I Built This is always a great podcast. It's great to hear from other people that have started successful businesses. Second Life is also a really great podcast that's sort of along the same lines of How I Built This, where they interview entrepreneurs and people that have built great companies. So I always look for inspiration and education when I'm learning. And I think that is the most important thing to look for in content.
I love that. And, you know, you said it's a small bubble, but because I definitely subscribe to the same methodology, because it's at the end of the day, the information and content that you surround yourself with, because there's just too much available out there. And it's, I love the strategies, how to be very selective about it. So when it comes to the last two questions I ask every guest, is one question is, I actually stole that from one of my former bosses at a technology organization, Ultima Software. And he would ask that every prospective candidate in the interview, which I thought was very genius, because it has so much power to this, because it helps you break the kind of the flow of the conversation and also let the other person almost at ease and, you know, also gauge their level of, you know, I guess, courage to be transparent. So the question is, how do you think this conversation is going, or how do you think this conversation went?
I like that. I'm going to start using that when I interview people.
Yeah. So that question is for you. How do you think this conversation is going, and how do you think it went?
Yeah, I like that, because you think the natural response would be, you would hope that people would either say, I think it's going great, or they would be totally confused by the question and say, I don't know. Like, is it going okay?
Right.
So I'm going to go with the first thing I said, which I think this conversation is fantastic. Nothing makes me happier than connecting with fellow entrepreneurs and people that help inspire me to learn and to grow in my own business, and learning more about other people around me in similar industries. I think that's, going back to the bubble concept, I think that's what we need as entrepreneurs. We always need people to connect with and to bounce off ideas and tell us what's working and what's failing. So any sort of conversation that sparks that, to me, is a great conversation.
Absolutely. Love it. Last but not least, what are you currently reading in terms of a book, or do you have a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Yes. Okay. So my favorite book of all time is The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. I don't know if you've
read
it.
I love it. I did not expect that.
I always go back to it. I love so many books. I love reading, but I think that book, if I had to recommend one, that would be it, because, and I tell people this all the time, you can ask people we work with, everybody would say the same thing, but it is such a good book because it's about kind of following the path that's put in front of you and just being smart and following your intuition and taking signals from whatever the universe is throwing to you to either follow the path or take a different path. And I think it's really important to tap into that in your career, in your life, whatever it might be, that's always key. And so that is my favorite book of all time. But I'm actually about to start a new book that I don't know much about, but one of my best friends sent me a book called Becoming Superwoman by Nicole Lappin. And I don't know much about it, but it's basically a book about finding balance when you have, you know, a very busy career and a family, and you want to have, you know, a social life, and you have all these different things coming at you. It's about prioritizing what's important and learning to find that balance, which almost sounds impossible. So I'm excited to read it, because I think, you know, entrepreneur to entrepreneur, it is really tough to find the balance. I think you live your work a lot of the time, and I don't always know if that's the right strategy, but that's what happens when you're really passionate about what you do. So we'll see how I find the balance.
I love it. Great recommendations. And for our listeners, we'll make those titles available in the show notes. Brittany, Ken, thank you enough for your time today. Very short and very insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all of my guests is to do a follow-up episode in about a year, where we will revisit the conversation we had a year ago, see how much have changed, how much have transpired, and basically, you know, just have the follow-on conversation. So I'm definitely looking forward to that with you.
That's fantastic, John. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.